businesses fret over Russia sanctions. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Diplomats from Ukraine, Russia, the U.S., and the EU are in Geneva today to try to defuse tensions in Ukraine. Over the next week, the U.S. is expected to apply more economic sanctions on Russia, which the West believes is behind the unrest in eastern Ukraine. The European Union is also working on sanctions, but some international businesses are now pushing back. Christian Oliver is European Union correspondent for the Financial Times. He joins us from Brussels. Good morning.
Good morning.
It sounds like some businesses are finally speaking out about their concern about sanctions.
Yes, this has been rumbling along for quite a time now, but it's certainly getting louder as we get nearer to a point where the European Union is being forced to think up some broad economic measures against Russia, and it's very much touching the companies who will feel affected by this.
Powerful constituencies, I mean, oil companies.
Oil companies, certainly, but looking the other way, of course, gas is a big export from Russia, and all the chemicals and fertilizers companies that are worried about their supplies being cut off, they rely very heavily on Russian gas.
This, of course, feeds into the diplomatic discussion. This is pressure to go slow when it comes to some of these sanctions.
Very much so. We don't know what's going to come out of Geneva today, but it certainly feels like within the next week or so, there's going to be far more pressure on the European countries to come up with some kind of response. They had said that Russian military interference in eastern Ukraine was a red line. We're probably not going to see 40,000 Russian troops coming across the border. We're just going to see more and more infiltration. It's going to become inevitable that some kind of red line has been crossed and the EU is meant to take action at that stage.
Christian Oliver is with the Financial Times in Brussels. Thank you.
Thank you.
China's equivalent of Twitter trades stock for the first time on the Nasdaq market today. Weibo is among China's most visited online destinations. But as Jim Burris reports, Weibo's popularity may be slipping.
Weibo claims 130 million active users. Lixin Wang is one, but he's not really active.
I used it sometime last year when my friends were using it.
The Georgia State University finance professor has since switched to WeChat. It's growing at three times the rate of Weibo. That's one reason Wang is skeptical about today's Nasdaq debut. Another?
控制.
The Chinese equivalent to the word censorship. China's government bans everything from sexual innuendo to political dissent on the internet. Jason Eng wrote the book Blocked on Weibo. He says the site's not as much fun as when it debuted.
Censorship has already caused a chilling effect.
Even so, he says it's still the go-to place for China's nationwide conversation.
Obviously, investors recognize the value of having that sort of space.
I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
Before a company sells for billions of dollars, it may have started as an entrepreneur's big idea. Typically, somewhere in between are venture capitalists who pour in the early money. A new study shows VCs are more likely to back companies if the founders are the same ethnicity as themselves. Marketplace's Mark Garrison filed this report.
I'm paying you $200,000 for 5%, yet you're giving this man twice that in exchange for a futon?
That's a venture capitalist investing in a startup on the HBO show Silicon Valley. Everybody around the table is white. The real Silicon Valley is also heavy on white guys. Minority company founders often go unrecognized or worse.
It's like, what are you doing here? Or go get me something to drink because they think I'm working here or something.
Wayne Sutton has started companies and mentored entrepreneurs. As an African-American in tech, he's not surprised by the study's findings of a tendency for investors to go with people who look like them.
It's hard enough just to try to launch a product that the world can use. But overcoming those biases as a minority entrepreneur is even double hard.
Many American venture capitalists are white, so black entrepreneurs confront the problems the study uncovered daily. Melissa Bradley felt it firsthand when she pitched her business ideas.
There was no one in the room that looked like me. There were no women, and there were certainly no people of color in the room, oftentimes in the building.
That sometimes frustrating experience inspired her to start her own venture capital firm. She says she's raised tens of millions for minority and female-owned businesses and profited. Bradley sees the larger problem as one of investors afraid to step beyond what they know.
A venture capitalist provides money, but also provides a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And so they're there with you day in and day out. And so there is this implicit nature around, if I have something in common with you already at the onset, that we're probably going to do pretty well down the road.
Both Bradley and Sutton believe in the power of a great idea to break through, no matter who pitches it. Deepak Hegde, the NYU business professor who co-authored the study, agrees. He adds the findings may point to changes VCs could make.
Startups tend to come from multiple communities. A venture capitalist that has a diversity of partners on its ranks might be in a better position to identify these opportunities and evaluate them better.
Because the last thing they want is a billion-dollar opportunity missed, lost in a blind spot. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
And when it comes to fueling admissions at American graduate schools, the focus tends to be on China. But a new study from the Council of Graduate Schools found that applications from Chinese students were actually down 3% this past year. Overall, international applications are up, driven by India, up 22%, and Brazil, up 33%. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.